So we could call the talk today, Welcoming. I want to talk about coincidence. And this subject has been in my notes for every single talk in Bodh Gaya and Sarnath this year, and I haven't really mentioned it yet. So I'm putting it in first today so that I don't skip it. Especially because people are starting to notice some wonderful kinds of coincidences happening around here. So one small example was the other day we had a group that I was facilitating called Hide and Seek, Inside, Outside. And there's a really delicious kind of cookie, biscuit, called Hide and Seek. So I thought, just for fun, I would bring the cookie to the group, but I forgot. So we got there, and Bat El came at the end with a box of Hide and Seek cookies. So we were eating them, which was very interesting as just a kind of echo of our exploration of what is inside and what is outside, as we were putting something in our mouth. And after the group, there were, amazingly, still some cookies left. And someone handed them to me, and so I started to give them to whoever I came across by chance. So, 1, 2, 3, 4. I had 1 or 2 left, and someone saw me coming towards her with the cookie, and she said, "How did you know?" And I said, "I didn't." Not in the way that she thought, not in any kind of way of knowing about her wish to have a cookie in that moment. We could say, if anything, a kind of coincidental knowing, or a kind of group coincidental knowing. It's very interesting. And this morning at breakfast, another friend came up to join us, but didn't want breakfast. Just wanted to tell what had happened that morning. He said he was driving the rickshaw that we have to carry the water here. And it's a good opportunity while you're here to try to drive the rickshaw, see how hard it is. Really hard. Give a different kind of sense of walking through the streets of India if you've actually tried to drive one of those. So he was trying so hard, so heavy, so wobbly, out of balance. And he was trying to figure out what would be the way to make it easier. And suddenly it got easier. And he thought, wow, I got it. And then he looked behind, and there was a friend pushing the rickshaw, helping him. And it brought tears to his eyes. He kept going. Got harder, got easier. He looked back and there was a friend pushing the rickshaw. And he said, "This is just like a Dharma talk." And we were all listening there at the yogurt stand by the side of the road. And we said, "Yeah, you just gave a Dharma talk." So the ways that our interactions help each other and ourselves in ways that we don't even know about. The ways that things have a chance to flow together that we can't really quite put a finger on. We could learn how to welcome coincidence. We could learn how to welcome this kind of coincidence that brings well-being, brings ease in moving the rickshaw, and brings something more than well-being. Something that, for today, I'm kind of calling coincidence. Surprise. Or wildness. And I like the word wildness. And today it struck me that, really, there's 2 kinds of wildness, at least. But the other day we were at the same roadside yoga and chai place, and a monkey came to join. It's this gray langur, beautiful monkey who's not exactly wild and not exactly tame. But knowing animals who grew up wild, I realized that what's scary in that wild animal is not the wildness that I'm talking about that I love, the wildness of that inability to, of the animal, including the human animal mostly, most of the time, that inability we have as animals to get out of our biological programming towards taking and towards violence. So knowing that anything could trigger the monkey, however friendly, to grab something in a violent way or to react defensively in a violent way or aggressively. So I realized that that's actually a lot of what we fear in wild animals is not actually what I think of as wildness or unpredictability, but actually this predictability. So I have friends who have worked a lot with playing and studying and training apes to see how far we can go with communication and language with apes. And so there are apes who can make tea. And there are apes who can communicate quite a few things. Quite a lot of language possible. But you still have to have heavy insurance to go into the cage with them. And it's just part of the work to be bitten sometimes. And in some of the studies, they've just found there's a certain kind of layer of, I would say, biological predictability, biological pressure that can easily pop out as violence. And it seems like we as humans may have the possibility to dissolve or break through that layer of pressure, of biological pressure and pressure of conditioning. Most of the time, it looks to me like most of the time we don't bother to come out from under that layer of pressure from conditioning and biology. We don't maybe also honor this other kind of wildness, the gracefulness in the way the monkey walks, the unself-consciousness. The possibility that we could live with less psychological fear, less unnecessary fear, less pretense and more coincidence. So it seems like in our own experience here, just in the days or weeks that we've been together, it seems like we could report from our own experience. We could say, I myself have noticed that sometimes I'm not under pressure from my past. Sometimes I can break out of my conditioning. Sometimes I can be free from my habit energy. We can be free from the judge and the censor and the repression. And this healing from past imprints is a huge amount of work and is important. It's that those days where you're like with the heavy rickshaw that's not going straight and it keeps wanting to go off into the flooded ditch. And you keep trying. And sometimes someone gives you a little push and it's easy but heavy. I felt really touched in the guided meditation that Nathan led a few nights ago where we were feeling our way through from being cells in water and feeling the evolutionary thread of life just deciding to go out of the water and go on the land and the heaviness of that, like the rickshaw. So there is this heavy work. But I also felt how, as human beings, we have this possibility of not being only in the water or only on the land, so to speak. Not being only about doing the work of getting free from the conditioning. Hard work, even when we have some help pushing from behind. It seems like to me that we have the capacity for the more fluid, coincidental kind of graceful movement. And we have the capacity and the need for the more earthy, heavy kind of work. Breaking through the inner judge and speaking anyway. Breaking through the inner repression and feeling anyway. And I want to speak about a very particular kind of inner experience that I feel is very much present in the room these days. Very human experience that is difficult, that can be released. So sometimes we may seem well outwardly. We may seem fine. We may even seem bubbly, happy, and going along with that coincidental flow. We may seem to be like that. And underneath, there's shock. Shock from something we may remember, shock from something we may not remember. Basically, essentially, the shock of having felt hurt. So hurt that we question everything. And so somewhere, something contracts in us. And there starts to be hesitation, holding back. Whatever may seem to be happening outside. Some way that we're not quite living. And I remember one time we had a retreat going in an ashram by the river Ganges near Rishikesh. And the Swami in the ashram always assured us that the water from his well was just fine. It didn't need any treatment. It was well water after all. And so we said, okay, thank you, and we put some extra treatment so that people wouldn't get sick. And so we managed with the situation as it was. It was a workable situation. But then one day the Swami said, the well is dry, so you can just go and fill your water bottles in the Ganga. And he's a Swami who has known Westerners a long, long time. So I'm surprised he even bothered to make the comment. And so we didn't know if we had to cancel the retreat. Without water, it's a little bit hard to do a retreat. You could take a bath in the Ganga, but can't go too long without drinking. And so we thought, well, should we require the Swami to bring a truck of water for us up this dirt road, all these kilometers from town? What are we going to do? And as we were trying to decide what to do, he had found one of the guests, an Indian guest, was there with a servant. And they sent the servant into the well. And the servant unplugged all of the little holes that had gotten blocked up. So by evening we had water, and all of our worry about what to do, no need. So I want to be really specific about this shock syndrome. It might be the case that all of us, basically, are deeply in shock somewhere. And what seems to help is some way of unplugging the holes. And one of my friends said he had a massage, and just the effects of the shock in him were massaged out of his body. So not to feel that we need to do something that sounds spiritual, in my opinion, whatever works. Whether it's predictable results or unpredictable by coincidence. Massage, holding, love. Lots and lots, buckets of love. As we start to feel a deep well is in us, as we start to release ourselves from conditioning, it can and does happen that we can hear ourselves saying, we can say, I'm 35 years old, I'm 68 years old, I'm 16 years old, whatever age you are. I've heard many ages saying the same. I'm such and such years old, and never in my life did I notice this before about myself or about life. I never felt that, I never saw that before. And especially painful, I never saw that I wasn't really living. And so it comes a time of grieving. And again, the grieving can be a part of the process of releasing the conditioning and releasing the shock. It's worth releasing ourselves. And as we release ourselves more, as we let the well fill up, we start to feel how being free from the conditioning, being free from some of the imprints from the past, allows us to be open in a way that we may have never felt. It feels like a new discovery. Opening ourselves to coincidence. To not just by my effort, my hard work. We start to have more energy to look more deeply. And we need to look deeply in a couple of different ways. So we often say, whatever the experience, that experience also has a deep well of aliveness in it, has a deep well of reality and truth in it. Can we look deeply enough to find that? But let's be specific here. The temptation to talk in generalities, to avoid having to actually look, the great temptation. So I wanted to talk about anger specifically today. Having sneaked in shock and grief already. Once there was a man in the West who did not have a home. And sometimes he would go to different shelters looking for a bed. And sometimes he wouldn't. And one night it started to rain, so he went to go and look at a referral agency, a place where they can help you find a bed, a place that also had some beds. And he wanted a bed for the night to be out of the rain. And there was a woman there trying to help people find beds who wanted them. And so they were talking, the man without a home and the woman who, it turned out, didn't have any beds. There were no beds left in the place. It was night, it was raining. And the man got really, really angry, as we can all imagine. When we ourselves get really, really angry if there's one mosquito in our mosquito net, or the bed is a little hard or whatever. Not necessarily so much about the reason that we have for being angry, but in this case, I think we can all understand. He was really angry. He was so angry, he pulled out a knife. He jumped on the woman and held the knife at her throat. What to do? The woman said, "It seems like you're feeling angry." It seems like you're afraid of not finding a bed, maybe. Seems like maybe you think that the world is out to get you, taking the last bed away right from under your nose. And the man said, "Yeah, I'm angry." And he said, "No, I'm not afraid. I'm sad." And they started talking. If we could also look past the knife and see and feel and hear what's going on behind the knife and have a conversation, sometimes it's possible. Sometimes it's not possible. So it's not like only if you really see behind the knife then you're safe. It's not a guarantee. In other words, it's not our fault if the knife cuts us. But even in such a situation, daring to look that deeply, daring to welcome, daring to see the potential of not only healing the hurt that may be behind the anger, not only the possibility that the hurt that's back there could be healed, not only the possibility that the person could be freed from that pain that leads to anger, not only looking for freedom from conditioning, perhaps we could say, as in the Tibetan tradition, that we could see the potential in that angry energy, once it's released from the conditioning, to be clarity, not just to be not hurting, but that same energy to actually be clarity, not just fixed, not just a little better now, but actually clarity, actually capacity to love, not just capacity to be loved. not just the possibility to be free from predictability, from grabbing someone else's breakfast. Not just to be free from shock, from being hurt. So we could say instead, not only the freedom to be welcomed, but the freedom to welcome. And we could welcome coincidence. We could welcome unpredictability and surprise. And here we can even find ways of practicing, which it's a strange thing to do and a little bit tricky thing to do, to practice coincidence, to practice accident, to practice not just healing ourselves and doing that hard, heavy labor, but to practice being part of this coincidence that knows more than we do, we could say. So there's one Tibetan tradition called pure perception, where we look at each other and we see the so-called purity of the person. We see past the night and we see the wisdom. And we see the potential for that wisdom to grow. And so this is one of my Tibetan teachers from 1987 who talks about this. And he said, at least it will make our life much easier here as sisters and brothers in the Dharma. At least we won't fall so much into the tendencies of comparing and competing. But it's also a whisper of something else, something deeper. We could also practice another kind of accident or coincidence. Something that we can practice that's beyond our control. So we can open all the little holes in our well, but it's not necessarily in our control how much water trickles in. But we could notice every day it happens. Even when I've had the so-called worst meditation of my life, where not only was my mind in 100 places at once, which in a way we could call a siddhi, a spiritual power, but at the same time, this would be almost like bilocation, my emotions were also all over the place. And trilocation, not even in the book. My body was jumping and painful, burning and cold, etc. Terrible meditation. Even then, there's somewhere in us that was available, was even welcoming all of that, whatever it was. So we are meditating, we're supposedly meditating, we look like we're meditating. And what's happening, many, many thoughts, including the thought, this is not meditating. And something is able to say, I was just thinking. Something not involved in the thinking is clearly aware that I was just thinking a lot. What is that? If we could dip into that, without pretending to dip into that, the hard part. It's so simple that we want to add to it, but it's also so possible just to notice right now. There's hearing, and whether liking, not understanding, something can tell you, you just heard my voice. So just dipping in there whenever possible, lightly. Our tendency is not to do things lightly. Our tendency is to think of the rickshaw. And so to be really vigilant with our tendency to pretend that this is that deep receptivity, that deep welcome that seems to be operating somehow in me. And yet even when I'm not aware, it's still going on in my own experience, apparently. So being careful not to pretend that deep receptivity, but to, whenever possible, dipping into it. There's a poem by Hafiz that I like. It's called God's Bucket. If this world was not held in God's bucket, how could an ocean stand upside down on its head and never lose a drop? Just the sense of wonder, of not only just going for explaining things and thinking that's it. How could an ocean stand upside down on its head and never lose a single drop? If our lives were not contained in God's cup, how could we be so brave and laugh, dance in the face of death? And then there's some difficult English I'm just going to explain. He says to himself, he's actually talking to himself here. Something is talking to himself here. Hafiz. There's a private, we can say bucket, or well, better, in us that knows a great secret. That's written all over our hearts. What's written is too sacred. Too sacred. To ever end. What's written 1,000 times, promises that say, life, 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 is too sacred, far too sacred to ever end. And so there's a practice. Another kind of practice of coincidence, where we could try to find out what doesn't die. The teacher of one of my teachers, Ramana Maharshi, is very famous for saying that we can ask ourselves, who am I? But in fact, what came to him in his own experience was not, who am I? It was, what does not die? What does not die? And I'd like to tell a story to help us go that deeply. Because knowledge, even about what is true and ultimate and real. So what? I'm talking about a deep well of knowing that's not about knowing about. It's knowing that could be called caring or could be called being. And we have whispers of that knowing, caring, being. That kind of well-being. In the stories that I told at the beginning about the cookies and the rickshaw. a long time ago now, I don't remember. I think it was 1988. I was in Ladakh, which is in the far north of what is called India, but is actually on the Tibetan plateau. Very high. 11,000 feet is the capital of Ladakh, which is about 3,000 something meters high above the sea. And there are even higher passes in the mountains between Ladakh and the rest of India. And winter was coming. And I was with my partner, and we definitely did not have enough money to fly out. So we had two options to go from Ladakh. Well, we had three, at least. We could have stayed in Ladakh. It's been really, really cold for a long time. But we wanted to leave, so we had two ways to go. One road that goes to Manali, one road that goes via Srinagar in Kashmir and then down. So in Srinagar, periodically there are attacks and people were starting to attack tourists. So the way through Srinagar was dangerous. The way to Manali, people were saying, any day that mountain pass will close. In fact, even already by now it may be closed. We don't know, because of snow. So during the winter, that road is left closed, is left snowed over. And everyone has to go around by Srinagar. So we didn't know how much time if we wanted to go the Manali way. So we were in Leh, in the capital, two ways to go, both dangerous. And it seemed like a common kind of situation. And for some people, a very common situation, two ways to go, which one should I take? And sometimes, even if we're just trying to decide which kind of coffee to order, it feels like a life and death situation. And how do we deal with that situation? Two ways to go, both dangerous, both unpredictable. I would say the first thing is to accept that if we want to leave Ladakh, we have to go on one of those roads, one or the other. We have to actually use the road. We have to actually start walking. So, speaking of walking, we had to start by walking because the buses had already stopped going. So if we were going to go by Manali, we were going to walk until a truck picked us up. That's the kind of system, so-called system, in Ladakh. Not enough buses, so a lot of hitchhiking by locals as well as tourists. Since I come from the United States, where hitchhiking is outlawed, is against the law for many good reasons, because of so much violence happening, it was not exactly a very appetizing kind of option. But going among the terrorists, neither sounded very appetizing. So we have to go one way or the other. And I'm not trying to say here that we have to choose a single technique or teacher or group or cult at all. If you know me, you know wouldn't enter my mind. But I'd like to make sure that we can feel this story that actually happened as also telling us a lot about today, our own experience, our own private well. Just yesterday, I was giving the instructions for meditation outside the hall. And just at the last minute, when I was about to give up, no one had come, two people came. And we did the guided meditation, listening to a wedding march for about 40 minutes. And then I asked if there were any questions. And one of the people said, well, it was difficult. I tried to be with my breath, but there's this emotion that keeps coming. It's a difficult emotion. It's a difficult situation, so many thoughts. And so we just explored a little bit. And I said, were you maybe trying to do both at the same time, being with the breath and being with the emotion? And by doing both, doing neither. And by the look on her face, looked really tired and seemed like, yes, she was trying to walk to Manali and walk to Srinagar at the same time, getting nowhere. And so we just did another 5 minutes meditation where she could just feel the emotion. So simple, to dip in. And a curious thing happened. Very curious. After just 5 minutes meditation, feeling, just feeling the emotion, not going with the thought, just the emotion in the body, floating in a sea of softness, as I usually say. After 5 minutes, we opened our eyes, and the one who had been in difficulty was radiant, smiling, and feeling it's not such a big deal. Now I feel the story's not so heavy. Now I can also feel my breath a little bit. And the other one, who had been fine, had a very wet face. And she said, I'm feeling something that I've never felt before. I don't know what it is, but I feel it clearly. So it's incredible what can happen in 5 minutes of just feeling emotion. Feeling an emotion I've never felt before, not knowing what it is, but definitely feeling it. This is one of the things that can happen when we start to walk. We just start walking. In one way, the load seems lighter, and in another way, something starts to open up, and we can keep walking. To be careful of the need that we might feel, to know what that experience is. Sometimes it's really worth feeling it, knowing it on a feeling level, and not hurrying to name it. And again, we can feel deeply inside the emotion, what's behind the knife of the emotion, but also what's opening up here by just being with this alive experience. What kind of strange, fresh air of coincidence starts to stir by being with this unknown feeling? So we need to choose one of the roads, and how do we know what is appropriate for us? What are the appropriate, what are the helpful, what are the freeing conditions to bring closer to myself now, so that my life is about freedom, not just talking about freedom. So that, in fact, my life is freedom. When we talk about practices, we're talking about conditions that we welcome because they're helpful. We welcome them for a reason. But still, how do we know? Maybe everything's helpful. So just like trying to choose the road in Ladakh, just like life in general, we can inform ourselves first. We can check, we can test what helps. We can check what are the weather conditions, what is the likelihood of snow on the Manali road this week. What is the likelihood of enough trucks going by on the Manali road this week? What is the likelihood of certain holidays that might make it more likely for terrorist attacks on the Srinagar road, etc.? Or here in Sarnath, we just want to do our laundry and it's been raining for a week. And the thing that I washed last week is still wet, hanging up and wet. When can I do my laundry? We want to know. When will it be appropriate? And so someone asked Dr. Jane, who has experience of living here for so many years. And he said, very confidently, in February it only rained once. So this is it. That was last week. And then someone checked the newspaper. And the newspaper said, it'll stop raining, and on Thursday the weather will start to change and it won't rain anymore. And this morning I woke up and I heard the rain and I thought, I really need to do some laundry. So we can inform ourselves that the information about what has been helpful in the past is already old news. So we can rely on it only in that careful kind of way. Not believing it, just saying, well, could probably do laundry today, but let's see. I could probably go with feeling the breath, or I could probably go with feeling the emotion today. Let's see. And then because of this deep non-duality of whatever is, how everything is expressing or showing or revealing its deep well of non-duality, pretty much doesn't matter that much which way we go. Not as important if we choose this way or that way, but that we start, that we dive in or dip in. That we are willing to start and how we start. So we could be too careful on the information side. We could think we never have enough information about the technique or the road or whatever. And we can keep on thinking that, and people do keep on thinking that for years, just checking out different teachings, different practices, not really starting their life. Putting off that moment of grief till 10 years later. So we started walking on the Manali Road. With big backpack on, high altitude. Hope we find some water soon. We got a ride with one army truck. They couldn't take us the whole way, they could take us halfway. And they weren't allowed to take us, so we had to hide every time we passed another truck. It was a pretty hard feat between two army guys, my boyfriend, and the cold metal door of the truck. We got halfway, and the army driver invited us to sleep in his truck overnight instead of sleeping out in the cold. Not that it was much less cold inside the truck, but no wind. This was also illegal. This was also not allowed. We were not to be seen or heard in the truck that night. It was kind of scary, more or less. Exactly my worst nightmare, exactly, except that my boyfriend was with me. And then it got worse. The driver came back with a nice strong smell of rum on his breath and said, oh, the pass is closed. We'll take you back to Leh tomorrow in the morning. Just before light, just walk up the road to where no one can see you and wait for us there around 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll pick you up and drive you back to Leh. Another 10 hours in the truck next to the cold metal door. Which might have been true. It might have been true that he was really thinking of our best interests and wanted to take us back to Leh, but something more than the smell of the rum on his breath sounded a little tricky, felt tricky. So we tried to lie down in the narrow front seat. And I really wasn't sure if the cold wind outside of the truck would have been better than the cold metal door pressing on the body through the sleeping bag. But I didn't have to wonder for too long, because suddenly I started to feel unwell. Very unwell. I felt like I was going to throw up. And I felt really hot. I had to end the cold. I had to take off the sleeping bag, take off the jacket. And still, I said, I feel really unwell. I think I'm going to pass out. And then I did. Not from drinking rum. Strange. So strange that, as far as I can remember, I've only told this story in a Dharma talk one other time. It just felt like saying it today. What was strange was not just passing out, because there was a lot of pressure on the body with all of that. High altitude, cold, fear, etc. But as I started to come back awake, I got to see more of the process of coming back awake. First of all, I knew the path was open. So that one piece of information that I did need came through somehow. By coincidence, I would say. Coincidence happening together. And then I saw the coming back into, from not knowing, from not having a location, from not having a time period, from not having a name, from not having a gender. I came back into, like a frog coming out of the water onto the earth, came back into gender, male, female, female. Name, place, time. Okay, here I am. What was that? That was a deep well. I knew that the path was open, and therefore we were getting out of the truck. We were not going to take the ride back to Leh. We were sleeping next to a rock. Trying to sleep next to a rock. As it started to get light, I finally fell asleep. And in the middle of sort of sleeping, I heard a truck go by. As it had already passed, as I saw a bunch of foreigners waving from the back. Hey! That was the last truck to go by for 2 days. So we started walking. And we got to an army tent where the nightmare goes on. This is just specifically my kind of nightmare. To be in a tent with a bunch of army guys who drink rum at night. Luckily, someone who was in the truck that had gone by and not stopped for us had gone into the army tent to register her passport number, high security border area. And she had ripped down the poster of a naked woman that the army guys had up in their tent. So luckily, I didn't walk into that tent. But I was laughing to myself when I realized I wanted to tell this story today, thinking of Radha's story the other day about the wild animals being outside of the tent. And in this case, the sense of that animalness in us human beings being ready to jump out at certain times, basically at night after the rum. Again, luckily, by coincidence, the person, the army man who was the helper of the main guy, was very, very kind and saw the situation clearly. And he told us, go to bed really early, and even if you're not asleep, be asleep the whole night until the morning. Because I have to give my boss my portion of rum. He drinks both of them, and things might get ugly. Just go to sleep. So during the day, the army people were so hospitable, actually. It was a great way of breaking through my conditioning and my fears about army people in tents in the middle of nowhere. They brought out their best. They made pakoras with their precious oil. They opened their cans of peaches. They asked us to play cards. Once a truck came after 2 days, it came in the night when we were sleeping. And the main army guy didn't tell us. And the truck left without us. So we could have easily been thinking, sure wish we took the Srinagar road. Somehow in the deep knowing, this was a nightmare, but it was going to end. In the deep knowing, I even felt exactly when the truck was going to come that would take us, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the third day. Luckily. Because already on the second afternoon, the head army guy would start to talk to me whenever my boyfriend went out to pee. He would start to ask questions like, which kind of birth control do you use? And I realized this is not just my fear because of past conditioning. I can see the specifics of the situation at the same time that I see through into the depth of this man and feel that we are friends. I can feel that simple love for that human being, and I can still go to sleep at night at about 6 o'clock. Oh, so tired, high altitude. We're not used to it. Sometimes the circumstances demand that we look that deeply, beyond time, place, beyond gender and name, beyond age, beyond culture. But not at the cost of not blinding ourselves to the specifics of this genuine, alive, present moment. Sometimes the specifics need more attention, sometimes we just go as deep as we can. Sometimes from the depth is the only way we can handle the specifics of the situation. Only from the deepest knowing. With just the bare information, there could be peace in a nightmare. Knowledge about even the most ultimate truth. Who cares? Deep well of knowing, caring being. It is not preoccupied with superficial well-being. That is even willing to be unwell. That is willing to welcome that experience that I never noticed before. And not pretend that I know it, that I know about it. And so even when there's nothing particular, there's nothing specific taking my attention, even when there's not a particular object that I'm putting attention to, knowing, caring, being. So sometimes on our path as we walk, sometimes as we try to live an authentic life, what we feel is that we are becoming more and more myself, more and more at home. We feel more and more at home in the world. We feel more and more comfortable in the world, more and more comfortable expressing ourselves. And sometimes, by coincidence, we taste a deeper knowing. It's like losing myself. Losing what I thought I was. And it's strange because it doesn't feel like a loss. It's not only about losing the conditioning that seemed to make me who I was, afraid of army tents, afraid of army drunk men, afraid of being attacked. But this other kind of coincidence that kind of pops out. And people may say to us, how did you know? And we don't have a normal kind of reason. I would just like to end with one line from a longer poem by Sati. He just says, and for no reason, I started skipping, like kind of running, dancing. And for no reason, I started skipping like a child. May we walk may we walk our own authentic path, welcoming everything along the way, so that we are taken deeply into deep well-being. Into deep, knowing, caring being. And may our walking, each in our own way and somehow coincidentally together, be a momentum of awakening, of liberation, for all beings, including ourselves, all beings, everything, everywhere.